No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to all of us. And I'm preoccupied. I'm looking at my phone. On the issues that affect the lives of all of us. And I hope you call in if you have questions at 627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Thanks so much. The show's a little disjointed today because our guest, the guest that we promised to have, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, is not on tonight. We had a technical issue, and he's going to be on next week. So please tune in next week because we want to talk about his book, Dying of Whiteness. It's a really important piece of work, and he's going to help us understand why we vote against our own self-interest very often and things that we can do to end gun violence in America. And that's really, really important. So please tune in next week. This week, you just get me because there's nobody. It was too late to book another guest. But I've got things I want to say. So I thought I would just be on and talk for an hour. I hope I don't bore anybody. Please feel free to call in with any of your questions. Let me start out today by saying, start out on a sad note. This afternoon, I went to a memorial service for a 34-year-old young man who used to work in my office. He was one of our interns, and he moved on to become head of our constituents' services. He was a great guy who affected many, many lives. He was only 34 years old, but so many people talked about how he had affected their lives. So many poor kids. He lifted so many people up. And it just shows you you don't have to live a long life to have an impact. And one person can really, really make a difference. His name was Connell Wise. My deepest condolences to the Wise family. He left us way too soon, and I hope that his memory goes on and his work continues. I believe it will. I believe all the young people that stood up and talked about him today will continue to work to improve their lives and improve the lives of others. That's the thing. Once you start helping people, you really can't stop. It becomes addictive. Excuse me, because the only real way to receive in life is to give. And people that understand that give a lot, and they have, they have really fulfilled lives. I know that I've always given, and I've received way more than I've ever given, I can tell you. I've gotten more than I've ever given. So I encourage everybody to do that and be like Connell. We're supposed to have Julia Paula, my intern, who went to the convention with me today, on today. She was going to talk. We're going to continue my talk from last week with Jim Bubar, who was at the convention with me. Julia works in my office now. She's my current intern, and she was my aide de camp out there. And the thing that's really interesting is, hard as it is for me to say this, is that she's exactly 50 years younger than I am. I'm 71. Julia is 21. One of the guiding principles of my life has always been what Albert Einstein taught us, that what you see depends on where you stand juxtaposed to what you're looking at. And I'm sure that even though Julia and I saw the same things, we saw things that were quite different. So if we can't have her on this week, we'll have her on another time to talk about that. But let's talk about what's at stake in this election. First of all, let me thank Joe Biden. President Biden did the most remarkable thing I've ever seen done in politics. I've been in politics for more than 45 years. I've worked on 7 presidential campaigns. I've been elected 3 times to public office. Actually, I've been elected 4 times to public office. And I can tell you, I've never, ever seen anybody make such a sacrifice. President Biden had the nomination locked up. He had 1,000 delegates more than he needed to win. There was no way for him to lose beyond stepping down and letting somebody else take his place, which he did. And he injected an immense amount of energy into the campaign. I think we've all seen that Democrats are now energized and are out there working hard to win this election and save our democracy. And make no mistake about it, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about saving our democracy. We've got a man that tried to overthrow our government after the last election when he lost. He's vowed that, told a Christian group, if you elect me, you'll never have to vote again. He's behind the 2025 plan that was put out by the Heritage Foundation. No matter what he tells you, he can stand there and tell you that he's trying to distance himself from that. He's trying to soften his position on abortion. But make no mistake about it, his top advisors were involved in putting that plan together, and that's exactly what they intend to do if they win. They're going to get rid of the Department of Education. They're going to make political appointees subjected to the firing of the president, and that will make them vulnerable to do his bidding rather than to work for the people of the United States. And believe me, our democracy is in real trouble here. And if it's hard for me to believe that we're still so divided. And just let me tell you what I walked away from the convention. I was there for all 4 days. I was a superdelegate. I've been to 13 conventions. This is my fifth time as a superdelegate. And what I saw was a great enthusiasm well up from the ground up. And that's really what we need. We need ground level support. We need to, our campaign needs to be a people's campaign. Those are the campaigns that succeed. And what I saw out there was really amazing. My favorite speech, I was going to ask Julia what her favorite speech was. Mine was Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama is just an incredible speaker. And I agree with her husband that I wouldn't want to follow her in a speech. She was just amazing. But the thing that sticks most in my mind from what she said was that hope is on the rise. We have hope. We were losing hope with President Biden because his support was waning. There were people, my daughters have expressed this. I have 2 daughters who are, one's in her 20s, one just turned 31, and they were worried about his age. And I think a lot of people were worried about his age. Let me tell you something. I've worked with Joe Biden for more than 20 years. I worked on his first campaign when he ran for president, and it was a very short campaign. He just ran in the primary in 2008, didn't go any further. And I've worked with him before that when he was in the Senate. I did work on one of his campaigns. He's an amazing human being, and he's done amazing things. And this is what the Democrats need to talk about. They need to talk about the fact that inflation is, in fact, coming down, that job growth is increasing, that unemployment is going down, that the cost of bread and gas are coming down a little bit. Inflation looks like it might be under control. The Fed's not talking about raising interest rates at this point because inflation is coming down. So we're seeing an improvement. And, you know, we have very short political memories in America. We have memories like goldfish. Did we not remember the pandemic? We went through this horrible pandemic, and our country has improved, and our economy is better, and our people are doing better than anybody else that's gone through this. Now, I know that there are still tough times out there. I know, you know, I was a young person. I remember eating Hamburger Helper and, you know, working two jobs to put myself through college. So I don't take any of this lightly. The price of gas is too high. The price of bread is too high. We need to keep working on it, but we're moving in the right direction. And make no mistake about it. I've been a Democrat almost all my life. And you know what? We stand for the people of the United States. Donald Trump and his friends stand for Donald Trump and his friends. Don't ever make a mistake and think that that's not the case. In addition to what Mrs. Obama said, I thought one thing that stuck out in my mind that Tim Walz said, the vice presidential candidate for the Democratic Party, said that we're all in this together. And we are all in this together. We have to remember that. Our country has become so divided. And this is what we all agreed to, folks. We all agreed when we made our tacit commitment to democracy that we would all be in this together. There are no sides here. We're all Americans, and we all have to work together. And we have to accept people of different opinions because that's what we agree to. We agree to accept them and work it out. So that's what we have to do. And on that note, let me switch over to one of my favorite occasional guests and a man that doesn't necessarily share my opinion on a lot of things. Don, are you out there? Can you talk to me for a minute?
Thank you for inviting me, Don.
Of course. You know, and it's always great to talk to you because, you know, I hate to just be one-sided about everything. And unfortunately, that's where we become, right? We become divided. And I know that you were a supporter of Donald Trump at one time. But let me ask you, how do you feel these days? How do you feel about the campaign? How do you feel about America right now?
Gosh, you know I love you, Senator Brown, but our politics would be quite different.
Well, and that's okay, because like I said, this is what we agreed to.
Right.
We agreed to me accepting you and you accepting me and us trying to work it out. So tell me, what are your politics?
I feel that the country has been put in an overwhelming amount of debt, and I think that only serves, you know, a very minute or minority group of very powerful people. And I think the country is in that situation now. And I don't think it has the brain power in any leader that I see to solve it.
So what are you looking for in a leader? We lack what you want in a leader. So what is it that you want, that you see that you're not getting?
Okay. I'm going to put it to you this way. I personally believe in a supreme being or a supreme lord.
Me too.
Right. Which means that a benevolent dictatorship would be really kind of more my thoughts as to what would bring peace to the land before liberty and justice for all could truly establish itself. But I think that possibly a benevolent dictator, not an evil one, but one who has the authority to right the wrongs and to, in my opinion, give the power back to the people. And that's going to take somebody with a lot of moxie and a lot of love for the people. Do I see that in anybody right now? Trump, for all his flaws, and he's got a lot of them. I think he's arrogant. I think he's egotistical. I think he's a chauvinist. But I believe he has a good heart and good intentions, although he's tied in with probably a lot of the bad actors and bad characters in power. But if I were to choose right now between Kamala Harris and Trump, I would go for the lesser of two evils. I would go for Trump, because I think that ultimately the economy will get better under him. And why? Well, most specifically, when you provide a country with cheap, abundant energy, the economy booms. And when you take that cheap and bountiful energy away from the people, you make it too costly and out of their reach, then economies, you know, go bust. That seems to be the trick. And I think that Trump wants to bring cheap, abundant energy back to this nation so that it can have an economic growth instead of a, you know, which where we're heading with all this debt would be one heck of a bottom. That's my opinion. And I could be wrong.
Well, let me ask you a few things. First of all, I don't see how a dictator can give power back to the people. I don't believe in a benevolent dictator, and you're welcome. You know, that doesn't mean I'm right, but I believe that power corrupts, and ultimate power corrupts ultimately. So I don't believe that, you know, I think that a benevolent dictator is a contradiction in terms. Although I would be happy, I'm the first one to say that I would be happy to sign up to be the benevolent dictator. Because I believe that I could be a benevolent dictator, but I'm not sure that anybody else can be. That's one thing. And another thing I'd like to ask you is, isn't it getting hot in Texas?
You know, Texas seems to have its extremes, doesn't it? More so, you know.
Because that's what worries me. Yeah. What worries me is that Florida is sinking into the ocean. California's on fire. 10 of the hottest days in recorded history have been this year. So that's a problem I have with drill, baby, drill. I have a problem because, look, there's no – every scientist worth his salt in the world says that the crisis that we're having with climate –
is because of – and I totally agree. I just think we have more time, Senator Brown, and we should take that time, keep getting the energy the way we're getting it, and keep that growth going into new industries and into more sustainable energies without destroying the lifeblood of the earth. But right now, if we take it away the way we're doing it, this economy is not going to go anywhere, and the people are going to suffer. And I believe we have longer periods of time to make that adjustment than what we're being given.
Well, and let me ask you, first of all, Kamala Harris, and I think she's made a big mistake here. Kamala Harris has reversed her position on fracking. And I think that what she should be saying is she's saying her values haven't changed, and I get that. But I think what she should be saying is just what you said, that I think fracking is bad. I think it's bad. The water that the wastewater that comes out of it is horribly toxic. But we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? There are thousands and thousands of jobs. There are thousands of jobs in Pennsylvania, maybe tens of thousands of jobs that are dependent on fracking. I know that in some of the rural areas of Pennsylvania and in Ohio, they sit on the biggest reserves of oil anywhere in the country, and the only way they can get it out is through fracking.
Right.
So I think that what she really should be saying is that, yeah, I don't think it's good, but we got to take the good with the bad. And so I've changed my position because I want to save jobs. And maybe our focus should be on finding ways to make the wastewater more tolerable. Maybe we should find a way to, we should be looking into research to make fracking more, less environmentally dangerous.
Right.
So I think right. that's, you know, and I get what you're saying. Look, we have a saying in politics that if you're unemployed, unemployment is 100%. You know, you don't care what the statistics are if you don't have a job. But let me ask you about the economy. Don't you have money in the stock market? I'm making so much damn money, I feel guilty. You know, the stock market's on its way to 42,000. I mean, the Dow Jones Industrial. It's incredible how well it's doing.
Right.
So, and if you believe in trickle-down economics, isn't this where it trickles down from? Doesn't it trickle down from the stock market?
Well, I agree with you there. You know, you're looking at a very strong market. Well, at least the illusion of, I'm not sure, you know, in what's really going on. But right now, it looks like we have a strong market. And I'm not sure how if I believe that yet. But there are a lot of companies sitting on piles and piles and piles and piles of cash. And,
yes.
Right, right. Lots of it. So obviously,
Amazon, Walmart, do we need to give them more?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of them are sitting on piles of cash. My feeling is that it's really, when it comes right down to it, well, I'll just say it. It's the elephant in the room. There seems to be an underpinning to deindustrialize this nation. And it seems to be going on for a long time. People in all walks of life, because they work or have people that work, they feel it. They start done. They kind of understand it. Some understand it quite a lot. But there seems to be a push to deindustrialize the nation. And maybe for the health of the planet, maybe, you know, for more of, you know, that we can get along with other nations and we become more equal. I don't know really why it's going on. I have my ideas, but it's going on. And at the same time, you know, we're being pushed out of our energy resources. So there's a concerted effort, I think, in the works. And it doesn't have our best interest at heart. I believe that. And I think that's big corporations like, let's say, BlackRock or even Vanguard, State Street. They've been mentioned in the past by many people. But when you look at really who the real big player on campus is, it's like BlackRock. And if you were to say, if people always say, who's the military-industrial complex that seems to be making all the money? And they wonder, oh, they get this term, military-industrial complex. But what is that? Who is it? Well, you can sum it down to one company that owns most of it, BlackRock. So there's corporate interests, I think, that are, you know, fooling the people and making situations work for the worse for the people for their own gain, for their own shareholders, their own corporation. And that bothers me because these companies have become so powerful and so ingrained within our government. And they have so much money to pay for agents and, you know, that what do you call those agents? But people,
lobbyists,
right? So much money that they can truly start to control things, and you know. That's never sat well with me when companies can get this big and they start to become egregious in their behavior and even criminal in their behavior.
Well, absolutely. That's absolutely the case. And,
right.
And you know, I think back to what Karl Marx said. You know, I'm a political scientist by education. I have a master's degree in political science. And I study a lot of Karl Marx. Karl Marx, you know, we tend to think of him as a communist, but that was his big mistake. His big mistake was he invented communism. But His critique of democracy was not bad, and we should think about it. And that's what he said. He said that the means of production, what you're talking about, industrialization, is unimportant. What's important is the ownership of the means of production. The people that make the money are the people that own the means of production. And those are the big corporations in this case. So Karl Marx would tell you, I think, that this is an inevitability of any democratic capitalist society.
Because it's so fragile. Right. Because
we follow our own self-interest.
Right.
He would say that everybody that follows their own self-interest can't follow a common interest. But you know what? The unfortunate reality to his theory is that it starts from a faulty premise. He says his feeling is that all people are good and that they are separated from their goodness by these things that intervene in our society and mostly through capitalism. The truth of the matter is that people aren't basically good. They're basically self-interested. They're basically follow their own desires. So democracy works better because people on the left tend to check people on the right, and people on the right tend to check people on the left. This is the thing that bothers me most about what's happened to the Republican Party, because I'm a Democrat, but I understand that we need a healthy Republican Party. You don't want me running everything any more than you want the Republicans running everything. You know, we really need each other. And so that really worries me. But let me ask you, what makes you think that this man is out for anybody but the big corporations? Doesn't it seem to you like he's only out for big corporations?
Well, if I look at the fruit that he bore, he put us in one of the largest debt economies I've ever seen. He gave so much money to Big Pharma and to the military complex. Yeah. And, you know, he's responsible for that. He's got a bear. I mean, and then many of the people he put around him made very bad decisions. And, you know, he has to be held accountable for that.
And excuse me, because I'm confused here. Are you talking about President
Trump,
Biden? Or
Trump.
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 Yeah.
Trump.
All right.
He put us in more debt than we've ever seen. And he hooked
us. So why
us,
do you want him back?
Well, again, the lesser of two evils. I truly don't believe that there's a great leader on the stage right now. But I truly believe in my heart that Kamala is wrong for this nation. Nothing against women. I think women, you know, ultimately, truly, are usually smarter than men.
Yeah.
You know, they just seem to have more brains. I mean, I shouldn't go there. People are going to hate me for that, but it's true. And they have a big heart. And, you know, I'm surprised there hasn't been a female president yet. But Kamala shouldn't be that person. I just don't think she has the ability, the wherewithal, the integrity, the mindset, the anything. She doesn't have any of the virtues or qualities that I would like to see in a leader. None. I mean, absolutely none. Except
well,
that she's female.
This is one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on. Because I think that many of us think of Trump supporters as guys that ride around in pickup trucks with gun racks and
sawed off shotguns.
And they're not people that are educated and plugged in and listening to what's going on. And that's our problem. That's our problem that we, you know, that's our prejudice. You know, the one thing that I've learned about Democrats and Republicans is that we have much different agendas, but basically we're the same. You know,
agreed. Donald Trump, I totally agree. Yeah.
Donald Trump was wrong to say there were good people on both sides of the Ku Klux Klan and the people that were protesting in Charlotte. But the truth is, there are good, solid people in the Republican Party, and there are in the Democratic Party as well. And so I often try to think of that. I try to think of my dear, I have many dear friends that are Republicans. And when I think of Republicans, I think about them. I don't think about people that disagree with me. I think about people that I love and I care about. And I say, well, I can't be right about everything because they don't agree with me. And I know they have good judgment and they're good people. So there must be something I'm missing. And I think it's really important for us to have these discussions. Right. So we
try to. I think the people don't trust her. I think, you know, the thing is, really, when it comes right down to it, the reason they'll pick the lesser evil and they feel that Trump's the lesser evil, as do I, we don't trust Kamala. See, there's...
Why? Wait a second. He's got no experience. He's never succeeded at anything. Every business he's ever had has failed.
But that might have taught him something. You know, failure has its own rewards. Kamala doesn't seem to have really failed at anything.
Look at Kamala. She was a prosecutor.
She was.
She prosecuted criminals. She's got experience. She's been a United States senator. She's never been elected to anything but president.
But here we are in government, and all these people that came before her had all this experience in government. Maybe it's time for somebody who doesn't have any experience in government.
Well, I think that's a very – I think you hit the nail on the head with people. I think that's the thing they like about him most.
Right. He's a wild card, and they want change.
They think – they want change, and they think this guy is going to shake it up.
Bingo.
You know,
bingo.
We get the word.
And sadly, on his first time out, he promised change, and we got farther in debt, and we got a stranger military, more powerful, more coordinated, and much more. And it seems the government has, you know, been beholden to the. To the medical establishment, Big Pharma. I'm not sure why. I remember when we had to swallow a $4,000 increase in our taxes when we were going to be made to pay if we didn't have insurance. But luckily, that didn't seem to pan out. But it kind of feels like that.
Well, and you know what? I really, the dilemma for me is this. I don't understand why it's so close. Because when I look at Donald Trump and I'm one of those people you're talking about. I'm an insider in the sense that I've done this for 40 years. I'm an elected official. So, you know, I had my friend, you remember Kathleen, who was my co-host. When I said to her, "You're being ridiculous, Kathleen. Trump cannot possibly win the election. Nobody's going to vote for him." You know what she said to me? She said, "You live in a bubble, Michael. You don't see what's going on. You live in a bubble." And she was absolutely right. I don't see what's going on because I live here in Washington. Right. We're all liberal. If it were up to us, Kamala would get 98% of the vote.
Right.
So we really don't. And you know, this program was started. By the way, we're up for a People's Choice Award. This program was started in order to get the word out about our disenfranchised status in D.C. and to bring some kind of, bring forth some kind of compromise in our thinking. That's really what I want to do. I certainly do not have any kind of, crystal ball or I don't know any better what's going to happen in the future than anybody else. But I'd like to see us come a little more together because we're so far apart. And I appreciate your input because I know you're sincere in the way you speak. I think a lot of people don't really pay much attention to politics. You know, we're about to the day after Labor Day, which is Tuesday, is really the official start of the end of the political campaigning. You know, this is the marathon from here till the end because people don't really pay attention, strangely enough, until this point. And you know, in many other countries, they don't have year-long political campaigns. They have a 10-week political campaign. That's it. You know, in many industrialized democracy. So we do a lot of hand wringing in America, right? We worry about this stuff and you know, and it's good to hear all different views. But it's hard for me to wrap my head around why people would choose someone with no experience who's done just horrible things. You know, he's going to have a fundraiser for the January 6th people that tried to overthrow our government. Let me ask you a question, and maybe you don't want to answer this because you don't want to take any grief for it. But do you think those people were patriots that stormed the Capitol?
I think that it was something that was turned into something it was never meant to be. In other words, you know, I don't believe that most of those people were there to do any harm but to voice their opinions. And they ended up being treated severely because of it, for voicing those opinions. That bothers me. Because, again, it's all to me about opinions and your ability to say those things. And they, you know, they're being politically persecuted, in my opinion. I believe that, yes.
Well, let me tell you something. As someone that's been arrested in front of the Capitol for voicing my opinion, I sat in front of the Senate, went to trial, was arrested, went to trial. I was treated very well. There was no bad treatment. The Capitol Police are trained to treat protesters well, but these people were not protesters. They were a rioting mob. And maybe you're right. Maybe they weren't there to do the harm they did, but who inspired them to do that? Who inspired them to go up there and do harm? They didn't go up there to protest. They bashed in windows. They attacked people. Five people died. It wasn't about, when I protested, nobody died. There was one poor son of a bitch that came out of the garage and ran into me and had to sit there for 2 hours waiting for the police to remove me, but he was the only casualty of the whole event, and all he missed was his dinner. But you know, I mean, people died on that day. These guys weren't there to voice their opinion.
Right, but they're having to take the full brunt of it all. And most of them just, you know, were in the wrong place where they shouldn't have been. But to be locked up and made to, you know, serve that kind of a purpose as a statement is pretty harsh. And these people don't deserve it.
So who deserves it? Who should be punished for that death?
Well, if there's...
Shouldn't it be Donald Trump?
Well, it should definitely be the people that incited it or planned it, definitely. You know, something like that should have never happened. It's unfortunate. It really is. It should have never happened because, you know, look at where it led as a nation.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are good people that have been held prisoner for a long time, and they just don't deserve it. They were just at the wrong place during much of this. And again, they're being used as pawns to make a statement. And I get it.
But I would argue,
enough's enough. Unless they actually harmed somebody, truly harmed them physically in that instance, they should be let go. Let them go home.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but isn't that the way it always is? Isn't it always that people get caught up in these situations that are innocents? You know, we're seeing it now. We're seeing it now in Palestine. I got to tell you, when I was at the convention, the one group of protesters that was out there every day, and they were really prominent, were people that want a ceasefire in Gaza. And I understand that they were young people, and I understand why young people are, you know, so upset about the mass destruction that's now going on and the innocents that are caught up in it. But when you look at Hamas, Hamas just murdered 6 hostages. They hide among the people. They're cowards. They're out there. And look at all the innocents that have been caught up in this. I agree. We need to find a solution to this.
Yeah,
we can't stop.
Yeah.
We got to stop killing babies. Yeah. We got to stop killing women and children. That's absolutely the truth. But isn't that always the problem? Aren't innocents always right. caught up in this stuff?
Well, we all want to agree with each other, but we have such, you know, diverse opinions that we're always hitting each other with the nth degree. In other words, the Democrats want to carry to full-term abortion. The Republicans don't want women to have abortion. There's a happy medium. Should women be allowed to have an abortion? I truly believe they should. My folks believed it. I believe it. Most of my family believes it. But right up until birth, no. You know.
Well, look, nobody can have an abortion at birth.
Well,
that's a bunch
right,
of
right, right. But
it's called
but,
murder.
You know, when you're talking up to maybe the third trimester, I would say, look, if things are going to be made, it should be made between the doctor, the patient, and legal guardians, if there are any, and it should be done preferably in the first trimester. You know.
But aren't these same people? This is the thing.
They clash. They're always throwing these extremes at each other, and that's why they're never coming to some form of a compromise. And
well,
it seems they're going farther right and farther left, and they're all hitting each other over with these, you know, these almost impossible demands. And so neither side can, you know, come to grips with it. And it's almost where it's, you know, making it difficult even for people to come to grips with it, because the political parties have never been at such odds. I mean, I've never read about such hostility between parties in the past. It's just amazing what we're seeing.
And I would use the example of gun control, because we talk about guns a lot on this show, and I grew up around guns. You probably did too. I don't know.
But yeah,
I grew up around guns, and I understand that it's more than just guns. And there's one group that wants no guns. And there's one group that wants
that. Right, right. And there's a happy medium there.
You can own
right.
a tank or a bazooka if you want to. I mean, it's crazy, you know. But let's not forget that the same people that want to control abortion also don't want birth control in schools. They don't want birth control given out. You know,
right. See, see, there's again, you're right. Yeah.
Keep women from getting pregnant.
Right.
Unwanted pregnancy is what leads to abortion. But these guys want it both ways. And, you know, I see that and I'm distressed by it. But we do have to come to some kind of medium, some kind
of. Right. Now, we got to start sitting at the table like grown-ups and really hashing it out.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I agree. But I think a woman should have control of her own body. I mean, look, if men got pregnant, you'd be able to get abortions at ATM machines. There's no doubt in my mind that would be the case. You know, this is a way to subjugate women. And I can tell you, my wife is the proud mother of three children. And there was a time when she was a little older, when she got pregnant, we had amniocentesis, and we talked about what would happen if we found out the child that we were about to have would have a birth defect, and we decided that we would keep that child no matter what. But that was our decision. And I know that she feels very strongly that was her decision, my decision, and that's where the decision should lie. It shouldn't lie in some legislature somewhere. But
right. Well, it seems you just advocated for smaller government, or did I hear you wrong?
Well, I believe in smaller government. I don't believe that government has the answer to everything.
Right.
You know?
Good.
But they're the bulwark against business. You can't let business control everything. Because, you know, I love these people that say, oh, I love Donald Trump because he's a businessman. And, you know, business does things better than government. Bullshit. If that were true, you wouldn't need government. You need government because there are many things that business cannot do. And one of them is to consider your self-interest. Bottom line is money. That's what business, that's what makes business run is money. And so you can't expect them to have your best interests in at heart, because they always have their own best interests at heart. I would say, look at my friend Don. My friend Don thinks there's a deindustrialization of America, but he makes his living on technology that didn't even exist 10 years ago.
True.
You know? Right.
But when I mean
to that economy, well, I understand what you're.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a it's slam. Like the
just you know, we very often do that because things aren't black and white. We've turned them politically into things that are black and white, but there's all sorts of subtle
grays. Yeah,
right. That we need to get back to, and you know. I just want to see the country move forward. I certainly have my opinions about Donald Trump. I don't want to see him in office again. I think he's the worst thing that could happen to our democracy. I don't think, you know, you talk about how he helped the military-industrial complex. He has no respect for veterans. I mean, how can you be commander-in-chief and call veterans losers, call them suckers, cause a fight at the most in the most sacred ground in America. I don't know how you can do that. And I think he does it because in his heart of hearts, that's the way he feels. He avoided military service 3 times. I mean, look at this guy. Just look at him if he was sent his resume into BBS Radio. 5 children by 3 different baby mamas. Now, if that was Kamala Harris, you know they'd be all over that, right? A guy that's never had a business that didn't go bankrupt. You can't name one business that he's ever had that hasn't gone bankrupt. His Bible company, his college, his steaks, his nuts, his casinos in Atlantic City. All he did was run a bunch of small businessmen like you and me. Don out of business. That's all he did there. So I think he's terrible for America, but that's me. And I appreciate the fact that I'm having an honest discussion with someone that disagrees with me, because I think we can't do that anymore. You know, we start to talk about it and people come up.
Right.
They just say, yeah, okay, you go vote for her. I'll go vote for him. You know, I mean, but we really need to sit down and talk about these things. And you're one of my favorite guests, I got to tell you.
Oh, thank you. Because
you're straight up. You're honest. You're not, you know, you're not trying to blow sunshine up my skirt. And it's funny because I was going to have this lovely young woman. I want to have her on the show because we have a different perspective, I'm sure, because she's so young. But my assistant said, oh, great. She'll come on and blow sunshine up your skirt through the whole show and you'll be happy, you know. And I said, no, I don't think she will, because I think she's smarter than that. But yeah, that's right. We're always trying to make, you know, that's part of our human nature, too, is right, that we don't like, most of us don't like conflict. But sometimes conflict's good, and it's important, especially in a democracy. One side cannot run everything. You know, we definitely need
balance. We need the balance. Yeah.
We need the balance. You know, they very often say God, so there are people that say God needs the devil. You know, I mean, right? Because you've got to have to know what your position is.
The yin and the yang. You've got to have the light and the dark, right?
You have to have an opposing opinion for you to check your opinion. And I think that's very, very true.
I think you're right. I think that's all part of the self-evaluating mechanism of our lives. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I think we've lost that. I think we've gone into, you know, a bunker mentality. I'm in my bubble, as Kathleen pointed out, here in Washington, and people in maybe in middle America are in their bubble. They see, we're a country of immigrants, but I understand why it bothers people to think that our borders are not protected. You know, I understand that. And, you know, I understand why people are against abortion. I'm in favor for a woman's right to choose every time, every single time. But I understand why somebody who believes that life is instilled by God Almighty has a problem with it. I understand with that. And I don't know why we can't sit down and talk about it. Why we can't say, yes, I don't agree with you, but I do understand where you come from. Well, we're almost out of time here because
I love the way you think. I mean, I truly do. I love the way you think, and I love the way you try to bring all sides of the conversation and the people to the table. My hat's off to you. That, to me, means more than everything, because that's how we will succeed as a people.
I agree with that, and thank you for that. And look, the reason I do this is for one reason, because I'm a high school dropout who threw away my life at 16 years old. I did drugs. I carried a gun. I was just a mess. And America gave me a second chance. I was allowed to come back because people loved me, and I threw away the gun, and I threw away most of the drugs. I threw away a lot of the drugs, and I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps, but only with a lot of help. And I believe that only in America could this happen. Could a guy who dropped out of high school, who threw his life away, grow up to get elected three times and become a United States Senator representing 700,000 people, have a master's degree, graduate at the top of my class. I'm about to start lecturing at my alma mater. So I believe only in America could this happen. And I love America for that. I love Americans, and I want us to succeed. I don't want to be right. I want us to succeed.
I just love the way you elaborate on that. Truly, truly, we love you. I love you, Senator Brown. It's been an honor having you on our network these years. I am just so tickled that you're still with us, because you really are what helps make this network great. Great talk radio. And I mean, you bring something to the table that no one else can bring. And it's profound. And I hope you keep doing it, because you're great at it.
Well, thank you so much for that. And can we leave? I'm leaving today with a song that I want to play for this kid, Connell Wise. Connell was 34 years old. I don't know, you know, I have a profound belief in God. I don't know why a 71-year-old gets to sit here and pontificate on an internet radio when a 34-year-old with the same disease, diabetes, was taken from us way too early. But these are things that go beyond our understanding. I think we also need to understand that there are just things that we don't understand. So we can't be sanctimonious. That's the worst thing for politicians, to be sanctimonious, to think that they know better than everybody, because there are many things that you can't know. So we're going to play a song tonight by Josh Groban. I think we all know it. It's a little longer, so I'm going to leave a minute or two early. But this is You Raise Me Up by Josh Groban. Don, you raise me up. So I'll see y'all next week when we have Jonathan Metzl, Dr. Metzl, who's going to talk to us about his profound book, Dying of Whiteness. So please tune in next week. And thanks for everybody that voted for this little show to get a People's Choice Award. I've been bragging about our nomination all over the place. So God bless you all. I'll see you next week.
Representation in the capital of this nation. 100 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.